It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 25th day of May, 2018. This is the Horn Head On Radio Net. No, Head On Live is where we live, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. And that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room. Just click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Or you can log in with Facebook or, you know, all kinds of other stuff. But you'll be met by the likes of Anatole and Malin and me. And longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky and pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan and more as they wander in through the course of the evening. It's Friday on the front porch. I look forward to this day. I love these conversations that we have at the end of the week. I do. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We got that out of the way. And I have thanks to send out to our subscribers. Thanks very kindly indeed to Asa. Thank you, Asa, who is not Brother Deacon Asa, by the way. And thank you very kindly to Kay in California. And since we came into the evening with a $540 shortfall, I can say that we got better to the tune of about $30. So, Anyway. So then I got a note. I got a note from Nydia. And Nydia said, sorry I haven't been in touch, but I'm still usually listening to your podcast. So I'm offering a challenge, $100 challenge tonight to start out the evening, but if we can get that matched, I'll put in another $100. Yes, no kidding. Thank you, Nydia. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. So that means there's a $100 challenge on the table that actually... your $100 will be turned into not twice as much, but three times as much. So if we can get $100 worth of contributions in this evening, then we will go down to only that would leave us at $210 to finish the week and to finish the month of May. So that's pretty doggone big. That's huge. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know we're 5x5 with Friday on the front pork. Friday on the front pork. See what he did there? Yes. On both platforms. Thank you. Hey, good luck to MIT softball. Ralps is watching right now. Ralps' niece is the coach of the team. Go MIT. Yay. That's wonderful. So, let's see. It's Friday on the front porch here in about, you know the drill, here in about 55 minutes or so, we'll crank up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable by the Skype Conversation Group, moderated, lo, these many years, by Sparky. If you've participated, you know how to do it. If you never have, you need to send a contact request on Skype. On Skype, mind you. Which works just fine. It was a hardware problem last night, not a software problem. That's one of the curses of the modern world. We just automatically default to thinking, oh, there's something wrong with it. Line of code's gone bad, or a box isn't clicked or checked or something. No, it was a hardware problem. It was a line that had become unjoined. And I was freaking out in here, and Agnes walked in and said, move. I said, why? She said, because I asked you to. And I got out of the way, and she reached down, and she plugged the two cables back together, and everything's better now. Yes. Thank you, Agnes. So phones are good. We'll be good to go for the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation, and hopefully we'll knock down Nydia's challenge and turn that into your 10 becomes not 20 but 30. If we can meet that challenge, thank you again to Nydia so very, very much, and hopefully we can because next week can be fundraising free radio. If we can have a Friday on the Front Porch miracle, okay? So that's awesome. That is awesome indeed. You know the drill. Go head on .live. There's a PayPal button, etc. Where to go this evening? Well, let's see. A couple of different things. I thought I would let folks know on the front end. No, it's not Friday on the Front Pork. It's Friday on the Front Turkey. Because Friday on the Front Breast just sounds dirty. That's what's going on the smoker this weekend. I looked at Agnes, and I've been subjecting her to a lot of pulled pork and ribs and things like that, and burgers. And I said, hey, would you like some smoked turkey? And she said, oh, I'd love some smoked turkey. So I've done whole turkeys on the Acorn, and we all know about the ribs and the butts and briskets and what have you, chickens. But I've never done just a turkey breast. And I got to thinking about how good that can be. So I went up to the Wiggling Pig, and I fished around in the frozen case until I found the biggest turkey breast I could find. It was like 8 pounds, about $10. And so it is. It's in the brine right now with a myriad of spices. Our buddy Joy on Facebook likes the word myriad. Hi, Joy. I do too. It's a good word. And herbs and whatnot. And it'll brine, and then it'll get rubbed, and then I'm going to mummify it in bacon. And then I'll put the temperature probe right smack dab in the middle of it and wait until it gets to the appropriate turkey temperature and pour the smoke to it. And I'd say, if I put it on early tomorrow by lunch, we should be ready for some pretty kick-ass smoked turkey sandwiches on sourdough. Yes, yes. With mayonnaise. More to come on that later. Just forget I said that. Never mind. Yeah, dadgummit. I just really didn't say that. Let's see. There's some... good idea, says Steve from Georgia Stan. My doctor was not happy with my latest cholesterol reading. Too much cats. Well, Steve, you're doing it wrong, brother. You don't go and get your blood... You don't go to Cheap Blood Work Tuesday... The day, after garming down a weekend's worth of cats as pastrami Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Dude, call me first. We're talking about science here, right? Tracy in LA is listening. The haha mayo. She knows what I'm talking about. Maybe we'll talk about it in the conversation here in about an hour. It's not slathered in bacon, Steve. There's no slathering going on. What's with the slathering? The bacon, the bacon is merely an insulator. It prevents the turkey from becoming desiccated and ossified and other words that don't get used in talk radio other than in this program. I'm a trained non-professional. I know what I'm doing here. Or probably not. But you get, Steve. Oh, okay, all good then. Yeah, right, exactly. Thank you to Kim and Malin responding to Nydia's challenge. That's humongous. So Nydia's challenge is let me make sure here. Malin and Kim say, love you, Bob. Keep it up. Meeting Nydia's challenge. So that means that with that out of the way, we've got $210 to finish the week and have an actual, no kidding, Friday on the front porch miracle. Yeah, that's true, Lee. Tech support 101. Is it plugged in? Is it turned on? Lee says, my daughter said, Dad, the monitor doesn't work. Could you look at it? I reached behind the monitor and pushed the power cord in. Problem solved. She said, no, that wasn't it. That was it. P.S. Happy Towel Day, too. It is Happy Towel Day. I got a note earlier from Lee. I hope you know where your towel is. My favorite line from the 1981 miniseries, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, described the Vogon constructor fleet as they hung in the air exactly the same way that bricks don't. I loved how Douglas Adams made reality so extreme that we could laugh at it. There was the Vogons. They'd act with total disregard of who they hurt. Like the Republicans in Congress. They would read poetry that would make the audience suffer. It's like when Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, by the way, read Green Eggs and Ham to the Senate. That reminds me of the food the Dentrossi cooked for the Vogons. Then there was Zaphod Beeblebrox, one of the great literary names of all time. I'm surprised that zombie Charles Dickens didn't crawl up out of the dirt just to go and shake the hands of Douglas Adams for coming up with Zaphod Beeblebrox. The president of the galaxy who had a head that did not understand what was going on. He kept doing things that he wanted and was chased by the law. But it must only be me who sees Donald Trump as having similar traits. America is being run by Zaphod Beeblebrox. It's not just you, Lee. I think there's just not enough of us to make Zaphod Beeblebrox or President Beeblebrox be hip and trendy. All Hitchhikers fans kind of have to agree, acknowledge or come to the realization that, as funny as we think it was, Hitchhikers it's an acquired taste. Marvin, Lee continues, knows what is right but is depressed and no one listens. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they ask me to take you down to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction? Because I don't. This makes me think of career employees of agencies who want to do what the agency was created for. And remember, at Milloway's, Max Quartelpline introduced a party of devout believers from the Church of the Second Coming of the Great Prophet Zarquan. I could see Mike Pence at the next table arguing that Jesus would get there first. Yes, it's fun to see how how the examples of the ills of society do not match the world we now live in. Excuse me, I need another towel and maybe a pangalactic gargle blaster. Oh, those are good. Okay, and I've got another note here from our buddy Terrace out in California, and he's got a lot to say, Terrace does. And as soon as I can, I had it pulled up, and then I went away, and there it is. The subject line is Southern Cross. Referring to the program last night, by the way, I had a note. saying that that three-hour filibobster was one of the best programs in recent memory. And thank you very kindly for saying that. Tara says, I listened to the TED Talk you played yesterday about mountaintop removal. I learned nothing because I'm a longtime listener. Along with police brutality, MTR represents the greatest moral issue our country has faced since genocide and slavery, neither of which appear to be stoppable. It is clear why Southerners applaud Donald Trump. They're afraid of cancer. They're afraid, they're tired of their lives getting worse year after year. Their pastors tell them that Democrats are to blame because Democrats love the Browns, the gays, the Muslims, and worst of all, the atheists and the scientists who think they're so smart, but are in fact agents of the devil. I would like to address listeners to the Horn, says Terrace, especially those who haven't contributed a dime to the Horn, yet have more than enough money to do so, and even use taglines like, it's okay if you're a Republican, without attribution, casually, as if it's a common saying among liberals. Well, to be fair, Terrace, I think it is. I certainly didn't invent that. I just use it a lot because it seems to be applicable a lot. I was thinking earlier today, however, that we could change in certain circumstances. And the way this occurred to me was I was thinking about, what if a white NFL player knelt during the national anthem in protest of the fact that this country lets children go to bed hungry every night? You know, white children. Donald Trump never would have said a goddamn word. Not a peep. In fact, he may have said, yeah, I applaud these players are pointing out. No. No. But what that got my mind thinking was IOKIYAW. It's okay if you are white. Because there's lots of examples of that in the news on any given day. Terrace continues and says, I'd like to address those listeners who think they're the good kind of rich white Christian. I'm sorry, my distant relatives, but there is no good kind of rich person, for we are deeply conflicted by capitalism. And there's no good kind of Christian or any other brainwashed person who chooses fantasy over reality. I'm a relatively rich white male scientist and proudly morally superior atheist who, despite my income, savings, and belongings, can barely pay my bills each month. That is the new normal. No sob story for me. I'm prepared to pay in excess of $200,000 for my daughter's college education and launch into adulthood. The rich decided that the University of California was too good for middle class and poor Californians and jacked up the rates exponentially starting in the late 80s. Recall, dear listener, that Governor Reagan bombed UC Berkeley with tear gas. Rich white men are assholes. I'm lucky, but I'm not a Koch or a Gates. I can hardly afford the money I send to Bob and Dr. Bill and to various Democratic candidates. These payments benefit my fellow patriots, yet are not tax-deductible. Speaking of taxes, there's this rich white man in California is paying an extra $5,000 a quarter because of dumbass Donnie and his brand of evildoers' tax cuts. That's quite a lot of money that I'm forced to send to the motherfucking war, what is still going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. I would rather spend the money on, say, food. That's money I can't spend on remodeling my house or buying more stuff that I don't need. The economy will collapse soon. So, fuck you, Jill Stein, and those who voted for her. Fuck you, non-voters. Fuck you, anti-science, anti-vaxxers. You're all pawns on the Republic, on the Repiglican team. The Kochs and Russians gladly use you as human shields. Everyone else, send the Horn some money. Tell your friends to get off their asses and get involved. People, says Terrace, are dying. Thank you for your note, Terrace. I take it all to heart. Believe you me, I do. And on another note, because we're all family and friends here, I got Alaska senator's name? I can't remember. Stevens? Well, Ted Stevens? I got an internet today. Now, I got a note from David in South Carolina, Stan. This is happy stuff. David in South Carolina, Stan, writes, since y'all are family to us, I just have to let you know that my daughter Candace made all A's this her second semester junior year at Princeton. On top of that, she is one of a very small group, 10% of Princeton rising seniors, selected to produce a novel for her senior thesis. Wow. Stunning success, seeing how she lost her mom during her first semester there. She also worked two part-time jobs and is a volunteer grief counselor on campus this past year. I had to share, as you and the Horn Family Community Congregation have become like family to us as we've listened to the show. Cheers. Signed, David, in South Carolina, Stan. Thank you, David. I cannot tell you how proud we all are of all the hard work that Candace has done and what she has achieved. That's wonderful. Oh, let me check email here. Strange church names, coming from Scott and Punky. Here are my two favorites. The Firesign Theater had a character named Pastor Rod Flash, who headed the powerhouse church of the Presumptuous Assumption. Don Imus's character, the Right Reverend Dr. Billy Saul Hargis, pastored the First Church of the Gooey Death and Discount House of Worship in Del Rio, Texas. Of course, for my money, nobody beats Kurt Vonnegut. The Church of God, the Immaculately Indifferent, is that what it was in Sirens of Titan? Malachi Constant steps out of the spaceship and says, "Thank God," and because they've already been told ahead of time, the crowd answers, "Why?" Mm-hmm. Lovely photos coming in from Steve in New York. Walked the Brooklyn Bridge the other night. How cool. How freaking cool. As long as you didn't run into a rabbit, you know, with a hybrid Bronx-Brooklyn accent. Things can get wacky that way. So, you know, just some communications to begin the program. Thank you, one and all. Billable Rick. Greetings from the Coleon Noir fan club. Greetings, Bob, from the head of the Coleon Noir, whatever the fuck his name is, fan club. What an effing but dangerous moron he is. Beautiful day here in Southern California, getting ready to kick up on the front porch in between preparations for Tuesday's trial. Oh no, not trial prep. Anything but trial prep. No sleep, nothing but Marlboros and bad coffee for the next... Ugh. Well, but I'm sure Rick doesn't do the Marlboro thing, but I bet Rick's had his fair share of bad coffee. Oh, yeah. So, now, one other thing. Yeah, that probably is, as Scott points out, Scott and Punky. On Thursday, the callers could hear you, but you couldn't hear them, right? Right. I'll bet that's what happened that ended my call on Wednesday. I could hear you just fine, but you couldn't hear me. That's probably when I kicked the cord into. Because we don't have a long enough, and so we've got two together, and they just... I got big old Herman Munster feet, and yeah, and a lot of cords. There's a lot. A couple of little weird things just along the way. The other night, I mentioned the fact that, oh God, whatever day it was that we talked about, had brief mention of the royal wedding, and I screwed up the difference between Suffolk and Sussex. Turns out it was Sussex, but I delivered this harangue on the mispronunciation by Southerners of F-O-L-K at the end of any word because they're afraid that they're afraid that people think they're saying fuck. Norfolk being one of them, Suffolk being another. Well, I was wrong. It was Sussex. But the weird part was the next day, we had Donald Trump in Sussex County, New York. Almost as if, Jung, I guess it was, who introduced the concept of synchronicity. Just as if my little bulbous nose was being tweaked by the goddess of irony, or maybe by the scientific operation of synchronicity. And I got another one this evening. So it was a couple of nights ago when we talked about the power of snorting in professional broadcasting. Who was talking about the Bohemian Grove? Oh, no, it was Rodney Howard Brown. Yeah, that South African preacher who came here to find his fortune. I mean, lead people to Christ. You know, because so we need South African evangelists over here because there aren't enough native grown. Well, we got to solve our immigration crisis, people. We've got South African evangelists coming over here taking the rackets that perfectly good American evangelists can work all by themselves. What is America coming to? But anyway, the mention was made of the Bohemian Grove, yada, yada, yada. And somebody said, whatever happened to the Illuminati? And I said, the Illuminati just aren't getting the play anymore. Well, lo and behold, today I start scrolling through my news stories, and there it is. Illinois GOP congressional nominee is a 9/11 truther who thinks Beyonce is part of the Illuminati. Okay, just because I said 9/11 truther does not mean that's a topic. The focus is on the word Illuminati. It's a story about Bill Fawell, F-A-W-E-L-L. He's short an L in order. No, not Falwell, Fawell. And he was unopposed in the Republican primary in Illinois for the congressional seat in Illinois' 17th district. He will probably get handily thumped. Because in the world of gerrymandering, they create a few districts that are almost guaranteed to go to Democrats just so that they can create the idea of not gerrymandering. But it's bullshit. But Bill Fawell is convinced that Beyonce, yes, Beyonce, has ties to the Illuminati, and that Jay-Z has a long history of serving up the godless Illuminati. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we've just tapped deeply into a rich vein of synchronicity or what, but you know, there it is, twice this week. Now one more thing, and this is going to be a little bit maybe this is a little bit complicated in setup, but I don't know any other way to do this. I ran across this video today, and I'm going to share some of the audio with you. And again, synchronicity. I saw this before ever I read Terrace's note about the Jill Stein voters and the Purity Patrol and all of that. I don't know who this dude is. Just to give you the setup, he's sitting in front of what appears to be a brick wall with three oval lights shining on it. He's got long hair parted slightly to one side, a torn T-shirt with the sides and sleeves ripped out of it, and a little Buddha statue sitting off to his immediate right, and some sort of microphone with a great big windscreen on it, and it's billed as ex-Democrat's message to Democratic Party, and you know, I'd say maybe the guy's somewhere between 27 and 32. Okay, now I'm not channeling my inner geezer here, because I remember being that age. I remember it very well. I'm still, to this day, quite young at heart. It's just the joints are beginning to creak a little bit here and there, and I can't quite take the, you know, take the physical abuse that I used to subject myself to. But I watched this thing, and I'll let you, and obviously you will judge for yourself. But no, I don't want to color him. I don't want to color your impression. Let's just see what the dude has to say, shall we?
Some people might not like this, but I have to keep it real with you. I registered Democrat. I've never registered Republican. I've never voted Republican. I intended to join the Democratic Party last
year. Intended. Past tense.
Last year. I wanted to be a Democrat. But what the heck is going on?
What's going on with these Democrats?
What in the world are the Democrats doing? I love equality. I love activism. I love social justice. I love the environment. But there's nothing liberal about the modern-day Democratic Party or the modern-day liberal media. Nothing. There's nothing liberal about celebrities. There's nothing liberal about the late-night hosts. Guys, what are you doing? There's not even a platform anymore. The platform is literally hate Trump. Hate, hate, hate. Let's make fun of him. Let's joke about him. Let's talk about him the whole time. That's literally what got him elected. You nonstop give the guy attention, but then have no solution for the thing that you're making fun of.
Then he puts up an editorial cartoon that shows a donkey in a straitjacket saying, Russia, 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 Russia. You get where this is going, right? I wanted you to get a little taste of it before I said anything. I've come to the conclusion that these kinds of videos, and apparently this guy is a show or something. I don't know. Never heard of him before. But I've come to the conclusion about this kind of a video. And, you know, it's pre-taped and it's edited and it's right. It's not live. It's not impromptu. It's not ad lib. Brother Deacon Asa says, oh my God, this guy's onto something. That explains the source of the line, Killuminati, all through your body, among other hippity-hoppity lyrics. Oh, I think that was the other guy. Yeah, wait till Asa gets a load of this guy. So, I've come to the conclusion that with most of these videos, and a lot of the people, and it's not always videos, sometimes it's people doing it in written form, there are only two alternatives. One, they are deliberately trying to make sure that people don't vote Democrat, or two, they are really as ignorant as they sound. They have no knowledge of anything before they decided to become politically aware. It's a phenomenon that, and I don't think I'm telling tales out of school when I say this, that Boss Man Wayne mentioned to me when he said, in 2016, a lot of people got involved in the political process who decided that history began with them. That there was no history that went before they decided to become, before they politically woke up. And you can witness it here in the first few minutes of this shockingly, pitiably uninformed, under knowledge laden. I'd love to see that translated into German, by God. Screed. For instance, our hero here says, the Democrats didn't have any platform. God damn, the thing was pages and pages long.
And when it was adopted in Philadelphia in the summer of 2016, it was, in fact, the most progressive platform that the Democratic Party had probably ever produced. But nobody told this guy, so he thinks the Democratic Party doesn't have any platform, and it's just Russia, 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 Russia. Because that fits his own confirmation bias, and he's trying to make sure, and this thing has had 2,787,485 views of people going, yeah, dude, definitely. The Democrats suck. I'm voting for Jill. Or some such silly horse shit.
Just a bunch of empty identity politics, which is race, religion, gender, xenophobe.
Just empty identity politics. Which is just, and words mean things, brothers and sisters. Just race, gender. And that's, you know, that's just a starting place. But he rattles off four, but he modifies them to begin with the word just. You know, when Tamir Rice was blown away within minutes of the Cleveland police showing up, he wasn't blown up because of working class issues. He wasn't blown away because of the cops' economic anxiety. He was blown away because he was a 12-year-old black boy that the cops couldn't tell wasn't a 22-year-old gangbanger. But to privileged boy here, who, I'm just going to tell you, is white folks, it was just identity politics, just race, just gender, just xenophobia. Tell me about the just xenophobia of the mother who has her child torn from her arms in a concentration camp run by ICE in the Trump regime. Tell me that's just xenophobia. Tell me how we have to talk to her about class issues and how she needs to sit down and have a kumbaya hand-holding session with some economically anxious, pasty-faced, doughy, retrograde, ain't never gonna vote for no Democrat, no how white guy from the Rust Belt. Tell me that and try not to laugh.
The delusion is getting unbearable. Joe Kennedy's speech was not good. That was not good at all. It was not authentic. It didn't feel real.
This is an old video, I admit, because he's talking about Joe Kennedy's speech, and he's not happy that Joe Kennedy gave a speech, because certainly he can do better than Joe Kennedy giving a speech. Yeah, James in Illinois says, Tamir Rice took about 3 seconds. Too bad Tamir Rice didn't understand the class issues plaguing the economically anxious white folks of middle America. Right? He didn't like Joe Kennedy's speech. And notice, by the way, the whiny tone.
Just felt like this weird pull the string on the doll, spin the wheel, and pick the random hashtag activism of the month, which is fine, but you have all the liberal media acting like it was great. This is literally why Trump won. There is no self-accountability anymore on the Democratic Party side. They think pointing the finger at others is going to solve all their problems. But it's not. It's just chasing people like me and millions of other people away from the Democratic Party.
How can you chase dude here away from the Democratic Party when dude already left? One. And two, who actually believes that this guy is arguing in good faith? 'Cause I don't. not knowing what we now know about attitudinal manipulation on Facebook. You want the worst part about all of this? I found this on a page of alleged progressives.
I did a street interview recently which pretty much sums up all the things that the resistance like about the Democratic Party.
We're going to skip a bit, brother.
Got to do the most important thing for Republicans and Democrats alike and all human beings. Self-accountability. Look in the mirror, self-reflect, and get better yourself. Hating on Donald Trump and Republicans only goes so far.
Nope, I still hate Donald Trump. The degree of cluelessness, and like I said, Terrace kind of triggered this. And I'm not deconstructing this just for the sake of deconstructing some stupid. What you're hearing here is the overture to the inauguration of Donald J. Trump for his second term on January the 20th, 2021. Someone out there wants... Oh God, this really sounds paranoid... Somebody out there wants this crap out there. Because this silly shit is refuted quite easily. Now, I realize that dude probably thinks that history starts with him. But there was another time, and this is a weekend for remembering that time, when decent countries of the world banded together to beat back global fascism. I'll be visiting at least one grave this weekend of a young man who never came home. If I ever have the wherewithal, and I probably won't, way up on my bucket list is to go and find two places in Europe where people to whom I was related later by blood gave their lives to stop Nazis. And you know, you can ask you can ask just about anybody who's ever been in the military. They say, you know, when you're in the thick of things, and I've heard this particularly from Vietnam veterans, when you're in the thick of things, when the bullets are flying, and shit's blowing up all around you, you're not thinking about mom and the flag and apple pie. You're thinking about making it to tomorrow. And I think that's largely true. And I think it was true in the Second World War as well. But there was an overarching motivation for being in that war. Vietnam, nobody really knew why after a while we were in that war. Iraq, we all had a pretty good idea that we were in that war because, well, by God, Saddam Hussein was sitting on a whole bunch of our oil. Afghanistan, well, you know, we had to bomb something after 2001 because we're not capable of really deep, serious thought in this country anymore, especially when there's a Republican in the White House. And Republicans have control of Congress. But during the Second World War, there was an overarching desire to beat back global fascism, because there were abundant examples of what the world would be like if the other side won. Warsaw, Nanking, just to name a couple. And so this is a weekend for remembering that. And it's also worth noting that while there was a coalition of allied powers that opposed the fascists,
And they did not always get along perfectly. I mean, Jesus, come on. We were hand in glove with Joe Stalin, please. And Churchill was an insufferable racist. But there was big picture thinking taking place to the effect of, we got to stop them, or they'll do this. They'll do what they've already done in the places they've conquered to the whole fucking world. And we don't want that. And that is a cause worth giving one's life. Now, had Dude here been back then, if he even deems back then worthy of his consideration, Lord only knows how it would have worked out. Dude and Jill Stein and the little green meanies and whatnot. Because instead of saying, listen, we got to stop global fascism, Dude's attitude is, well, what do we stand for? What's our platform, man? And that way lies madness. When you are in an existential fight, you do not stop to quibble about the spelling on the name tags. Okay? But that's what Dude here wants to do. You know what's funny? I go around the interweb tubes. I never see any of this shit coming from the other side. I don't see this stuff going out to Republicans. What do we stand for? Well, we know what they stand for, don't we? All you have to do is pay attention to the news and you know what they stand for. But Dude here thinks, because he hasn't heard of it, that the Democrats aren't standing for it. Dude doesn't understand the majority-minority system of a bicameral, first-past-the-post, winner-take-all system. He doesn't understand that you can introduce bills till hell freezes over if you're in the minority, and ain't not one of them going anywhere. Dude wants the Democrats to stand for something for him.
I wasn't feeling half of what Donald Trump was saying on his campaign trail, but to counter him was not a solution, was not a brilliant idea. It was just this empty vacuum.
Yeah, because he wasn't feeling it. I wasn't feeling half of what he was saying, man. Were you feeling a quarter of it? A third? Because if you felt a quarter of a third or a third of it, man, you were a dumbass. Because we heard that. You know,
well, you know, Donald Trump had ideas that, I mean, he was talking about some of the same things Bernie was.
Well, yeah, he was talking about some of the same things Bernie was. Because he has no moral compass and he'll lie about anything to anybody. If Donald J. Trump told me the sky was blue, I would walk outside to check and would not be the least bit surprised if it turned out to be sky to pink with green stripes. But he got us sad because he didn't hear policies from the Democrats. Hey, Bernie ran as a Democrat. Bernie got his platform, big chunks of it, adopted by the Democrats. How about that? But Dude can't remember that. Maybe it's a short-term memory pot thing. I don't know. I mean, I've been there. I smoked my fair share of weed. I've lost my car keys.
only to notice that they were, you know, sitting right beside me after, you know, burning up a biggin. But this was really kind of astonishing to me.
Oh, fake activism, fake feminism, calling everything racist, sexist, and xenophobic.
No, nobody's calling everything racist, sexist, and xenophobic. We're calling the things that are racist, racist. We're calling the things that are xenophobic, xenophobic. And we're calling the things sexist that are sexist. But it seems like, and again, back to that synchronicity thing, in the last couple of weeks, I've seen a bunch of this shit. A bunch of it. Of this, well, the Democrats aren't for anything. And, you know, I can find it at in the for-profit media. I can find it with this alternative crap. The Democrats don't have to be for anything right now. The Democrats have to not let the barbarians through the gate. That's all. And if you really want them to do things like that, then you're not that interested in keeping the barbarians out of the gate. This is mind-numbing in its stupidity. Brother Deacon Asa says, pretty sure dude is going to be feeling what Donald Trump has to say all the way up to his rectum now. But, and I guess that's a vernacular language, too. I feel you, man. But the problem is, 2016 was not about feelings. Not for anybody who actually knew what this country was facing. And if you voted on your feelings, you had pretty much already abandoned your whatever civic duty attaches to voting. You know, I halfway bet this guy thinks that Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat because she was mad at the bus company. But then again, he probably doesn't even know who Rosa Parks was, because after all, history begins with him. He'd probably accuse Rosa Parks of being all caught up in identity politics, man. What does she stand for? She's just opposing that bus company that won't let her ride at the front of the bus. Well, we can't all ride at the front of the bus. White people. I'd like to say that I'm surprised, but honestly, I'm not. Let's skip a bit, brother, again.
Box and telling them to act how you want them to act. It's about true diversity. But what's their idea of a solution? Mocking, attacking, threatening, and telling everybody that you can't be part of our side if you don't agree with us.
Hold on, let's get all of that.
They ever. CNN isn't feeling that. What the heck is potential for momentum? That's not a policy, that's not a stance, that's not a solution. That's certainly not leverage in a bipartisan deal. This is ridiculous. The only thing that they have left is the fact that people hate Donald Trump so much that they're willing to run in circles like a hamster on a wheel instead of self-reflecting and realizing the reason he won is because other politicians are that awful.
Yeah, because see, notice here, the only reason that Donald Trump won is because other politicians are that awful. In dude's world, there's no possibility that the election was monkeyed with. In dude's world, there wasn't money going to the NRA to funnel into the Trump campaign, you know, from Mother Russia. Didn't happen. In dude's world, Paul Manafort, George Papadopoulos, those cats, they weren't monkeying around with the Russians. Yeah, VT Blom in the chat room says, Bob, it's the next wave of the Russian political influence. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know for sure what's going on here, but I'm deeply suspicious.
That's why he won. More personal attacks and less policy than any presidential candidate ever. That's why they lost, but they keep doing it and keep shoving it down our throats. They think Oprah's going to make it better. The Grammys, the Oscars, the Emmys.
Who's now, most of the people in this little community listen to a lot of other programs. Malloy, Hartman, Randy, my buddy Rick Smith, Dr. Bill. Who in that group has said that Oprah or the Grammys will make it better? Hint, no one. And so this thing goes on for like 7 minutes. And oddly enough, through all of this whining, there's never a moment of suggesting what he actually wants. Reminds me of an old joke. Yeah, organized mob makes you an offer you can't refuse. The moron mob makes you an offer you can't understand. I mean, this guy makes you think that if he decided to go out and rub out a couple of rivals, they'd be found the next morning with their heads tied together, shot through the hands. And as silly as he is a good avatar for what we're dealing with. Can you imagine this guy? Because it's Memorial Day weekend. Can you imagine this guy storming the beaches at Normandy? I can't imagine me storming the beaches at Normandy. But the thing is, the thousands upon thousands of people who are willing to die to stop global fascism, who did storm the beaches at Normandy, they pretty much couldn't imagine storming the beaches at Normandy themselves. But they did because they had to. Because it was an utter and absolute necessity. Dude would be standing out in the water with the bullets whizzing around going, yeah, but they kept telling us Oprah and the Grammys. They kept telling us Glenn Miller. Well, see, you've gone there, Asa. Say what you will, I'm convinced that this douche canoe is a right-wing plant. Even if he's not a direct plant, the thing is, and Robert Reich addressed this in a video a couple of days ago himself, even if he's not a right-wing plant on a self-aware basis, what he does inures to the benefit of the white wing. Because he makes it clear he's not voting for any Democrat who doesn't bow and scrape to whatever it is he wants, but he won't say what he wants. He wants people to quit talking about racism and sexism and xenophobia and stop being all wrapped up in identity politics. And I'll say now what I've said before. Anybody who uses that phrase, as anything other than to criticize the use of that phrase, is confessing that they don't give a tinker's damn about women's rights or the rights of immigrants or the rights of people of color or the rights of the various stripes in the rainbow. They don't give a fuck about them. They'll give lip service to it, just like dude here did. But if you're looking for him behind you in a march covering your back, for fucking get it. And that's why the bottom line here is that there's no victory to be had in the attempt to remove Donald Trump from office. There's no victory to be had holding hands with the people who voted along with the Klan and the Nazis for Donald Trump. People who say, well, you know, I don't like the Klan, but I'm going to vote with them. It is a fool's errand to try to coalition build with those people. Those people. Largely white people. But there is a tremendous majority, an overwhelming majority, to be had among people of color, among the recently arrived here, people who can vote, among white folks of goodwill who have their eyes open, among women who actually take umbrage at being told that their right to choose is identity politics. Among trans people who don't like being reduced to nothing but identity politics and thereby being told that when a trans woman is found beaten to death in an alley, that somehow or another it's implicit that she just didn't understand the economic anxiety of the violent people who beat her to death. There's no majority to be made with the goddamn National Rifle Association or their paranoid freak membership. But you can build a coalition that will roll across this country like a mighty river if we will finally come to understand that it's not identity politics, that in fact it's the same struggle, it's the same thing we've been talking about for a few generations now, civil rights under the Constitution. You know, I had that clip from Matt Staver earlier this week talking about how we are one justice away from overturning both Roe and Obergefell. And once again, I begged, if you don't believe me, please believe them. Please believe that they mean to do what they say they mean to do. Larry, meanwhile, says, no joke, but this guy and others like him talk like Russian operatives. I know of what I speak with this subject. Now, I don't want to go there. I don't want to think that. I'd prefer to think that this guy's educable. But I'm guessing that since he's out there making videos, he's got himself a gig, and it's providing some level of money, so therefore, he's not going to shoot the goose that lays the golden egg. The problem is, there were a lot of people like that in this country in 2016 who thought quietly to themselves, well, you know, I'm going to vote my conscience, man. But, you know, Hillary's going to win. So I'll let everybody else do the heavy lifting. And, you know, I'll sit here and play with my conscience. So that's pretty much most of, well, yeah, it's not even most of what I had for the first hour, but it's a lot of what I wanted to hit. Thank you, Labor Man. Labor Man says, Bob, the dude is a right-wing jagoff. I tend to concur, but I'm trying to be nice. Subject line, dude. Lee asks, are you sure there's an E at the end of that word? Dud. Well, I can't preach on Steve from Georgistan. Dadgummit, we've got an extraordinary, ordinary roundtable to fire up. But I appreciate the sentiment. Thanks again to Kim and Malin for answering Nydia's challenge. That means we got $210 to finish off May and finish off the week and drive the lupine pest off the porch. So hopefully, wouldn't it be awesome if there were 21 people who wanted to subscribe for $10 right now? Yep. But before I do quit, one last thing. And it fits. It matches up. You know, and it's kind of disgusting to ponder, but Dishonest Donnie was slated to deliver the commencement address at the United States Naval Academy today. My dad was a World War II sailor. Navy has always been almost mythical to me. But over in the pages of the Baltimore Sun a couple of days ago, a pair of 2001 graduates of the United States Naval Academy by the name of Daniel Barkoff and William Burke wrote an op-ed. And on this Memorial Day weekend, and especially having just heard from Dude, it's worth sharing. Messrs. Burkoff and Burke write, in 1969, after having already been held hostage for 4 years, a graduate of the United States Naval Academy faced a lonely choice in a North Vietnamese prison camp, how to prevent his captors from using him in a propaganda piece. James Stockdale chose to smash his own face in with a stool rather than give aid and comfort to the enemy. In the early years of Stockdale's 7-year imprisonment, the current president of the United States was enjoying the comforts of Wharton Business School. Having received 4 draft deferments to attend college, he received another after graduation for supposedly having bone spurs in his heels. He would later go on to make fun of POWs of that era, claiming John McCain was not a war hero because he was captured. In 1972, a graduate of the United States Naval Academy named John Ripley low-crawled and pulled himself along the underside of the Dong Ha Bridge for over 3 hours, making multiple trips with explosives. His actions, all done under fire from the North Vietnamese Army, earned him the Navy Cross for Valor. In 1972, Donald Trump, who took over his father's apartment rental business, was a year away from being sued by the Justice Department for refusing to rent apartments in one of his buildings to black people. On September 11, 2001, thousands of graduates of the U.S. Naval Academy steeled themselves for a mission to bring violence to our enemies. After the World Trade Center's towers fell, Donald Trump bragged on TV that a building he owned was now the tallest in downtown Manhattan. On February 1, 2003, a graduate of the United States Naval Academy named William McCool was at the helm of the space shuttle Columbia when it broke up during reentry. The current president was then gearing up to become the host of a reality TV show called The Apprentice. In late June of 2005, two U.S. Naval Academy graduates named Eric Christensen and Mike McGreevy insisted on being in the lead aircraft riding into a hot landing zone in Afghanistan's Korangal Valley to come to the aid of their wounded, outnumbered, and about-to-be-overrun team of SEALs. The helicopter was shot down, and they and more than a dozen others lost their lives. A few months later in that same year, the current president of the United States was captured in a recording bragging about assaulting women. "I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the pussy. You can do anything." These are just a few of the many examples of graduates of the U.S. Naval Academy making big choices laden with courage and self-sacrifice that come from a history of countless small choices. To be truthful, to stay committed to a code of honor and duty, and to choose a harder right over the easier wrong, even if the choice is contrary to their own short-term personal interests, these are the choices that make one fit to lead. Contrast this to the personal and professional honor of the sitting President of the United States, who time and again makes small choices guided by self-interest, ego, impulse, and immediate self-gratification. He could never do what we ask our U.S. Naval Academy graduates to do. He is a physical coward, a liar, and no leader at all. It is right and fitting that the President of the United States give a commencement address to a service academy's graduating class. It is also right and fitting that citizens of the democracy for which these graduates soon will be charged with protecting point out the personal cowardice, narcissism, and incompetence of the current president. Those of us who have served in this nation's wars owe it to our new graduates to point out how better served we would all be if in 2020 our small choices as citizens added up to one big choice, one that will deliver us a leader whose personal choices and conduct are more in keeping with the honorable traditions of our alma mater. Don't think you're likely to hear anything stronger than that, more profound than that, more powerful than that. It's almost like the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal, for God's sakes, were channeling the gentleman who wrote to the Baltimore Sun. They referred to him as a pile of impulsive, ill-considered threats. That's Trump's disastrous foreign policy mess. And you know what? I'm not going to let the likes of Dude push me away or you away from relentlessly inveighing against a monster in the office of the president. Because sometimes something like that is resistance. And it is what has to happen. It is the necessary thing. Hey, my t-shirt's got sleeves and sides. I guess I'm just not cool. So let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, shall we? You know the drill. If you've never participated, send via Skype, on Skype, Skype's real easy, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail that leads you to the room where we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and you'll be part of one of the most, to my mind, enjoyable little conversations available in the world of radio today, where real people just sit around and talk about stuff and get the same amount of regard and respect as so-called experts. This is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch. I'm Bob. We'll be back.
tried to draft me, I earned a college degree. Buying time, though things were not so bad. But then I got a guitar, found a job in a bar, playing acid rock till I was numb. Tell me, where are the flashbacks they all warned us would come? We are the people they couldn't figure out. We are the people our parents warned us about. Sometimes I wish I was back in my crash pad days before I knew what cash flow meant. Seems everybody's jogging or heavy in the hell shit. Don't tell me that I ought to get her off, 'cause I love Cajun martinis and playing afternoon golf. We are the people. Shout, shake it up, baby. We are the people our parents warned us about.
There just aren't a lot of good songs out there with references to the Naval Academy that you can bump out with, but that happens to be one of them, and I suffer from the old DJ disease, so that explains that. The incomparable Jimmy Buffett, We Are the People Our Parents Warned Us About, from, oh my God, 1978 or something. Jesus, who knows? It's Friday on the Front Porch. Let's go right to the conversation, since seeing how Skype works and everything. Hey, Sparky.
I remember 1978.
Oh, I do, too. I was a freshman in high school.
I remember 1973, too. One incident that you set me off on when you started that reading that guy's story when you sit, James Stockdale.
Yeah.
I was sitting in Okinawa morning time because I worked swing shift in the day room of the barracks. Watching them get on the 141 in Hanoi, all the POWs in their, with their brand new clothes on and everything. Light blue shirts and blue pants like Navy people wear. I just burned in my brain that day. And on a black and white TV, too. That's what makes it more vivid in my mind's eye. Did we lose you, Bob?
No, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Oh.
I was listening.
I heard like a click.
No, that was someone. No, I heard that too. That wasn't me.
Oh. But other than that, I'm sitting in the house today because we had a hell of a rainstorm today.
That's a good thing, right?
Oh, this time of year, anytime you get a rainstorm, it's a good thing.
That's what I thought.
Can't hurt. I mean, it's already got everything growing. The winter rain's already got everything growing great. Hay's off the pasture. Cows will be coming back pretty soon. Life's going on. It's a little cold today, only 56 degrees.
That would probably have me weeping 56 degrees.
But anyway, the weather changed. My knee feels pretty good today.
Oh, is that what? Maybe reduction in... No, that'd be... higher humidity makes your knee feel better?
barometric pressure. I don't know.
No, well, Agnes, to be fair, Agnes had to drag me in to do the program this evening, I confess. Because once I fire up the weed eater and get going, I'm hard to stop.
Oh.
And it becomes a campaign.
Is it divorced like it was last year?
Oh, yeah, I deliberately let that happen because I enjoy the hell out of cutting it down.
You could almost bail that, couldn't you?
Just about, but it's the leach field's back there, so you can't run tractors over it or anything. Not, you know, so, no.
I'm just kidding.
But I enjoy I don't enjoy the lawnmower near as much as I do the weed eater. There's something a lot more immediate about the weed eater.
It works a different muscle set in your body too.
Well, that's true, but I mean I think it's the fact that you're carrying it and you're swinging it and I don't know, maybe there's something in my deep DNA that's like, it's a weed eater is more barbarian than a lawnmower is.
Just think if you had to use a hand scythe.
I happen to have one right here. When we went to my aunt's funeral, there were a bunch of old antiques that had been collected over time, and my cousin said these were probably made by one of our ancestors, and gave me a pair of hand-sized, sickles, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And a meat cleaver from hell. This thing weighs, this thing has a heft to it like a sledgehammer. And
curved?
No, the meat cleaver? No, it's just a cleaver.
Just whack. A beater?
No, it's for whoom, down on the meat on the chopping block. It'll cleave through big bones.
Okay.
And so at some point, I'm probably going to try to. I'm probably going to take some steel wool to it and try to clean it up a little bit clean it up a lot and maybe even bring it back to usefulness.
You had me thinking of Buddha knives back in for a minute.
Not so the sickles. I'm gonna take one of the rusty sickles and I'm gonna pair it with a hammer. Somewhere here in the fabulous Horn Studio. Because it's a rusty sickle and that seems symbolic all by itself.
Oh, you're gonna display it.
Yeah, hammer and sickle. Get it.
Mm-hmm.
But a rusty sickle and maybe a rusty hammer.
Oh, I got some of those, too. I could probably beat you to it. I could probably have one up by tomorrow.
Lib Talker says he'll display hammer and sickle. The mask is off.
Well, hell, I got a Kaepernick jersey hanging in my shop.
That's cool.
Well, it's actually a T-shirt, protest T-shirt, with a number 7 with fist in the air. So, you never know what I might put up in the man cave. It's still got plenty of room to redecorate. I got two of my old fatigue shirts hanging up there, and all my 49er memorabilia and IBW signs.
Oh, nice decorative motif.
Mm-hmm. I can't hold a candle to John Bernardo down in Texas. He's got his little shop area. He's getting it all stuff people send him, and he just got him surrounded. You know the guy that rants down there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Christy.
He's fun.
He was trying to do live videos on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but his bandwidth has been screwing with him lately.
it's not easy to do.
Well, he's got his son supposed to be a technical wizard helping him try and set it up.
I've been thinking, I'd like to figure out a way to maybe someday get a stand-up desk and do more of the program here from a standing position as opposed to seated. I think that'd be kind of nice.
Oh, one of them folding jobs?
Those are cool. I've seen them advertised, and it's like, oh, I bet they're $1 billion.
Well, let's do some research. Maybe we can have a fundraiser to get you a folding desk.
They have motorized ones now that are very cost-effective. You just press a button, and burp, it raises up, and you're good to stand. And
what's
you're tired
you
of standing,
say? You say cost-effective, Steve. What's the cost?
Well, I don't want to spit anything out there because I don't want to mislead, but we'll say less than $300.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
You wanna take on the responsibilities as a member of the Horn Research Department and find that out?
I will, sir, and I will send you a link via email.
Because I mean, I've been the desk that I actually use here. My God. Probably is 30 plus years old. It's a great big humongous computer hutch, and it's not for broadcast, but it's sturdy enough. I remember when we were putting the studio together, and Agnes and I were just screaming at each other trying to get it through the door. Because it's probably 500 pounds.
Yeah, now I need a new chair too. My chair is, all the screws are popping out of it, and so I don't know. I'm going to
well,
go
just
that
a,
route.
It's just from the standpoint of what I do here, it's just a different vibe to stand up and do it as opposed to sitting down.
Well, they say sitting's the new smoking, you know.
I had not heard them say that, Steve. I'm glad you told me.
Oh, come on, Bob. You're pulling my leg.
No, I have not heard that sitting is the new smoking.
Yes, yes, it is. It's just the new smoking. It's bad for you as smoking. And I'm not picking on you. I know you enjoy a cigarette every once in a while, and that's cool. That's all good. I enjoy sitting. I might get this stand-up thing and freaking hate it, you know?
Yeah, no. Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Rick.
What's up, Rick?
Hey, I just posted something for Bob. It's Very Desk is the one that's advertised the most.
Okay, that's the one I've seen, yeah.
Standing while working.
And what's the cost, Rick?
It depends on how much has to be on the desk that you're, you know, working off of, you know?
Okay.
So maybe we could do a fundraiser for Bob for that, you know?
Brother Deacon Asa just found me one at Costco.
Oh.
No, I mean, he's not going to run out and buy it or anything, but.
Okay.
But it's got a.
But why not?
Well, because he doesn't. Hi, Tracy. Because he doesn't have his own printing press printing money in the basement. That's why.
Jesus, that's not right.
No. But I'm glad you chimed in because I'm eager to.
You're dying.
I've been eat up with it ever since you sent it to me.
Yeah. 21% white. That kills me. Bob, you go ahead and do the lead in, Bob.
Tracy sent me her Ancestry.com results. Shall I share?
You shall. Go ahead.
So Tracy is 33% Cameroon Congo. And the next highest percentage is 21% Western European. And that's before we get to the 16% that's Ivory Coast, Ghana, the 12% that's Nigeria, the 6% that's Benin, Togo, the 5% that's Senegal, and the 4% that's Mali. Hey, but good news, you're less than 1% Scottish, Irish, Welsh.
Yeah.
Less than 1% Native American and less than 1% Asia Central. But wow. the reason Tracy said I'm all eat up with it is because I no sooner saw that than I said, you'll be eating mayonnaise by midnight and seasoning food poorly by morning. We may have to start, with no offense to Steve's lovely wife, we may have to start calling you Karen.
It was Oh, yeah, or Becky.
No, we will not call you Becky.
Let's snark there.
Yeah.
Karen would be flattered to be compared to Tracy.
It's the it's, but it, I know it's the mayonnaise part that that lit up Tracy.
When you said mayonnaise, I'm like, oh, God.
Mayonnaise by midnight.
Mayonnaise by midnight. But what tickled me when I saw that, it, like you said, I mean, 21%. I knew, I mean, I'm from America, and my family's predominantly from the South. So I knew there would be some white folks in the woodpile. I just didn't expect 21%.
Because white folk, because old Morris could not be trusted to stay out of the quarters.
Exactly. I mean, and then I was looking at, because, you know, because my mom did it, my mom and my two of my siblings, half-siblings as well. And even on my mom's, I was looking at her results, and she's only like 16%, or was it like, or 14% Western European. And this is for my mom. So apparently, I got born white from my dad. I'm like, wow, where did all this white come from? That just, I was like, damn. As much as white people get on my nerves, maybe that's it just still tickles me when I saw that, because I just got them back today, and I'm like, no, wow, that's a hefty percent.
Well, I mean, it's your second highest percentage.
Right. Like you said, that's before, it's, you know, Nigeria and Mali and all that. I'm like, wow, that's funny. That is funny.
Bob, do you still have all those apprehensions? Now, I've heard that they have tightened up their restraints as far as they're not going to sell
your
DNA
out. I think if I do it, I'll go with 23andMe.
Okay, because I got a kit sitting here, and you talked me out of it. Well, I already paid
for it. Well, if you've already paid for it, for God's sakes, use it, man.
Use it.
Right. But I don't want to get, you know, one of my family members denied insurance because I got some kind of crazy autoimmune disease, you know.
Well, no, that's that. See, but here's the problem with all of that. That's going to happen a generation or two down the road. And unless there are any little Steves running around that you don't know about.
No. No. All right. Well, I'll send it off then.
You know, I mean, we can file that in the same category with the piece of bubble gum from 1984, you know. You didn't know about that either.
Yeah, not until I was informed about it, you know.
But I don't think that's going to impact you, and I'm pretty sure that... Now, the bubble gum might have impacted. See what I did there? I'm pretty sure you're not likely to go off on a serial killing binge or anything.
Yeah, for some reason I don't think Steve is like related to the Georgia State Killer or something like that, or I guess the Peach State Killer, I guess you'd call it, right?
No, in fact,
Ixnay on the each pay eight stay iller k ick ray.
My roots are from southwestern Virginia. I'd be more related to Bob than some Peach State Killer, so which one's as bad as the other, so we'll just leave it at that.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad that the DNA was able to find that creep, because I'm watching like a documentary on what is it? It's Headline News Network. It's like kind of owned by CNN, and it's like a 4 or 5 part series about the Golden State Killer. That guy was freaking evil, you know? So,
I'm glad, like you said, I'm glad that they used this DNA. Oh, God, speaking of, you know, I said that my mom, so I'm looking at my mom's comparison. She's only 9% Western European. Mm. How did I get 21%? That's crazy.
That kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, it has to. How did it jump up threefold?
Well, but
your dad must have a lot of Western European in him, I'm guessing.
Well, it's that, but that's not even for sure, because one of the downsides to all of this is that just because we map the genome doesn't mean we know exactly what it does. I read an article earlier today about the fact that, you know, we were taught for years, for instance, that brown eyes are brought on by a dominant gene and blue eyes come from a regressive gene. So I've got a blue, I've got two brown-eyed parents, but I came out with blue eyes. Well, I had a bunch of blue-eyed grandparents. But there's more than just that gene that goes into blue-eyedness or brown-eyedness or green-eyedness. And so, you know, we can't say for certain that it's your dad. It just could be, it could be that that your mom had genetic material that passed to you that didn't manifest in her.
It passed to her. That's true. I mean, because that's one of the things that I was reading about when people do this, these tests, you know, they all through their, you know, family history, they've always, somebody claimed that there was Indian, you know, Native American blood in them. And then they get their results back and there's no Native American blood. And they said it was either one or two things. It's just that that's been, you know, not so much a lie, but just what people say. Or that, you know, one person, like you said, that my mother might have had those genetic tracks or whatever, but I just didn't pass on. If you know, it was passed on to me and not to her.
Right. I remember, you know, a good friend of mine who is, you know, undeniably American Indian, and on a number of occasions I've heard him speak, and he'll stand up and say, "Hi, my name's Matt. I got some white in me, but I can't prove it." Because that's one of those things that just pisses off some indigenous Americans, is that white folks will say, "Well, you know, we got some Cherokee in us." And it's always Cherokee.
It's always Cherokee.
Yeah. And honestly, there may very well be family tales of that, because there were people, especially during the removal, and especially like in the 18th century when white folks were driving the Shawnee for all they were worth out of Appalachia. There were people who hid within white culture, but I don't know. You know, I don't know how much of that, you know, enters into the gene pool.
Right.
And I always get a little, honestly, I always get a little creeped out when we talk about this stuff, as fascinating as it is. I get a little creeped out because there are echoes of other regimes that were obsessed with people's backgrounds.
Right.
Could that be a certain Middle European dictatorship of the 1930s, Bob?
It could. It could. Absolutely, okay. Rick. It could.
All right, the damn thing's going to sit on my mantle then.
No, get it. No.
Steve, I'll take it.
Stick the Q-tip in your mouth and send it in, okay?
I haven't even opened it.
How much is it?
I don't remember. I got it before Christmas last year as a Christmas present for Karen and I. I got her one and me one. It wasn't that expensive. I got like a Christmas special, 2 for $50 or something.
Has she done hers yet or not?
No.
Agnes will not do it.
Bob's like, "Oh, man, don't do it, Steve."
No, I did not. I did not say, "Don't do it, Steve." Now, you just quit that.
Well,
stop telling Steve how not to do it, Bob.
Stop telling me how not to spit. Maybe I wouldn't hurt my back, but no, that's a whole other issue.
Okay, so I got to get a little feedback here. Your responses to dude.
Oh.
I mean, I don't like feeling like I'm out here all by my lonesome on these things.
I'm just trying to figure out who dude sounds like, a famous person who talks like that, who's on TV. I can't quite.
Matthew Dowd. He's
classic. Oh, is that Matthew Dowd? Okay.
Yeah, it's classic both siderisms.
Okay.
Which Drift Glass has been screaming about this for over a year now, and he doesn't conflict with your show at all, Bob. It's
no,
I think
I'm afraid Drift Glass is going to spontaneously have a baby one of these days.
Yeah, but he is.
But he's right. What he said the other day about, okay, when we fix this and we're all going to be friends again. He said no. The Republicans are going to have to march with their heads shaved, you know, through the streets and then be forgiven.
And basically take a look at what they've done.
And even Frank Rich to a further extent. I mean, both of them, they're always screaming every week after week. They're screaming as both siderism, and it's bullshit. And it's like Bob said earlier, there's somebody behind them that are paying them to perpetuate this myth.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the dude
is
a total fraud.
It seems entirely too convenient that this would just be somebody's spontaneous idea. I mean, if you could see the setup there with the three little oval lights and, you know, dude, how he looked and everything, and then to his immediate right, the little plastic Buddha statue, and I'm going, really? I mean, that just looks like what somebody in, you know, Moscow would think that some pseudo-progressive would put on their set.
I mean, the production value, it sounds pretty good, the production value.
And the edit cuts were pretty good.
Yeah. Is it a smiling Buddha?
It's like a child Buddha.
Mm.
So, you know.
I think it definitely does smell of a counter, a political trick, let's just say, you know. The guy's not genuine. He's a total fraud.
He didn't make any sense to me.
No. I mean, you could, you know, I mean, he is sort of channeling some of the Joel Stein supporters. I mean, the members of the, you know, Sparkle, Fart-powered, Unicorn Cavalry, Purity Brigade,
yeah.
You know? In terms of some of the things he says, but I think he gave himself away a couple of times as far as being a plant. Some of the things he said, I can't exactly remember the lines because I didn't write them down, but there were a couple things he said that seemed to give him away as a plant, you know, as a fake. Like, I guess one of it is the Democrats don't stand for anything. Well, yeah, what about the big frickin' platform, you know?
Given Sunday, you'll be bombarded with both siderisms. I mean,
especially Sunday.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just waiting for the member of the Flat Earth Society to be welcome to the Sunday talk shows, you know, because you've got to represent them as well, you know.
Hey, Rick and Tracy, have you seen the ballot yet?
I haven't looked at it. I've gotten my pamphlet.
Yeah, look, I'm looking at mine and trying to figure out how, because there's a couple of people, I mean, like, you know, for senator,
a couple people.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
How is that Nazi doing these days?
There's 33
Sparky?
People on the ballot for senator.
Wow.
33. And how many for governor?
27.
Wow. Talk about a jungle. Man.
You know the thing about California, Bob? Everybody's on the primary ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jungle primary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor, because there were all those people in the race. And, you know, the recall election. Yeah, he was one of the most recognition, you know?
Yeah.
People knew who he was, you know? So
the first time we had that kind of thing going on, it caught on there.
Yeah, how is the Nazi doing in the polling now?
I don't know which one is he.
Little, what was his name, Bob? You had a spot from him, or anti-Semite or whatever, you know? Talking about Feinstein.
He was citizen
of Israel, not of America, you know, that whole
thing.
Right,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Who was that?
One of the leading Republicans for Senate.
Yeah.
Patrick Little?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's the boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's there. He's on the ballot.
Is he winning the state of Jefferson, Sparky?
Shit, I don't know. I don't know who, you don't see any yard signs or anything out now for the primaries. Just for local elections, you know, like district attorney, judge.
Yeah.
Sheriff, that kind of thing.
I mean, I suspect that the, you know, the two Democrats are probably going to win the primary for the Senate race. And I don't really see a likely possibility. I think Newsom is going to win.
I'm tired of her.
For governor. Oh, I know that, but, you know, I guess Kevin DeLeon is a good option.
Well, that's who I plan on voting for. I mean, but
that's
I don't
what
see...
I plan on voting for, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll vote for him. I figure.
Feinstein, though.
Yeah, I'll vote for him if nothing else, because I want to see him at least be one of the final two, because, you know, Feinstein is clearly going to get more votes than anybody else because of the name recognition, you know, just having represented California since, what, 92, I think?
Right. She's the only one, because De Leon hasn't run any commercials here at all, but she's been running commercials. But remember when we had the Democratic State Convention here, neither he or Feinstein got the majority, so no one got the Democratic Party endorsement.
Okay.
That's why they're both on a ticket.
Yeah, I didn't realize there were so many names on this year's ballot, Sparky, but I guess it makes sense.
And the same for governor. Running for governor, was it Villagrosa? Why can't I think of the man that's probably going to win?
John Chang.
Yeah, what? Yeah, I found
and
it interesting.
The superintendent, state superintendent of schools, or what? Delaine Easton.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because I've noticed that for the advertising that I've seen. I mean, I don't see a lot of ads because I usually fast forward through all the commercials. But sometimes I stop to look at the political ads because I'm a junkie, and I noticed that John Chang, who's now currently the California State Treasurer, is basically shooting at, I think, he's trying to get second, because I think he knows he's not going to beat Newsom as the first place finisher. So he's attacking Villaraigosa as basically a corporate politician.
Neoliberal establishment shill?
Basically he was a big charter school proponent, I think, Villaraigosa was.
Yeah,
right?
And look, I mean, there are real issues that we can have real debates over, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a deal breaker.
The ads are fair. The ads are fair that Chang is running against Villaraigosa, because when he was the mayor of L.A., he kind of struck me as kind of slimy, just the way he, you know, just the way he governed. I mean, I never got to vote for him because I don't live in L.A.
He is a classic machine party Paul.
Yeah, he is.
I heard bad shit from Tim from L.A. the other night. We were in a conversation.
Oh, about Villaraigosa?
Yeah.
There were some questionable things he did. I think he, you know, I think during the water crisis, he like watered his like lawn like every night. You know, the public, the mayor's house or whatever. You know, they had it going nonstop. You know.
Well, let me just touch on how crazy Georgia Stan is. Brian Kemp, the guy that actually had a gun at his future son-in-law's head in a campaign ad, is in a runoff for the governor against Casey Cagle.
This is for the governor. The Republican side, right? Republican side?
Yeah. And Georgia's going to go governor, so he has the outside snowball's chance of actually winning. And that ad he ran is just beyond the pale.
Well, look at Blankenship. He got 20% of the vote in West Virginia.
Yeah, that's what Bob was saying. Yeah.
So, you know, look at Trump. I mean, he didn't have, you know, he had a solid hardcore of maybe 30-35% in the primaries, and that's been enough to get him, you know, the nomination and then steal the election, make it close enough so the Republicans could steal it, you know. So, see Abrams' chances of our becoming the first female, and for that matter, the first African-American governor of Georgia.
Would love to see it. She's got my vote all the way to the bitter end. But if it happens, I will be shocked beyond belief.
She is she a statewide office holder right now, though?
I'm not sure, Rick. I'd have to look into that. But she has some background, you know.
Yeah.
She's a very intelligent woman. And
she's been in your assembly or senate or something.
Okay, so she wasn't a statewide office then, but at least an elected office.
She's a Harvard graduate too.
Yeah, she comes across as really a good politician when you know she was interviewed after after her primary win, and very impressive woman, you know.
But do you really think these hee-haws are going to put a woman in office? I mean, let's be serious.
Well, I don't know. Georgia's what, they last had a Democratic governor when? Carter? Or no, hasn't been.
It was Roy Barnes was the last one we 98? Had.
98? Was that 98, I think?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay.
And before that, they held the Democratic seat all the way till Reconstruction.
Right. I know.
And it's been flipped around, and I don't know if it's because of the infiltration. You had all these people migrate up here from the northern states and turned it around, but Georgia has went solid Republican for the last, ever since the Zell Miller days.
Yeah. And then another thing I'm looking at is I read an article in the New Yorker about the race for the Wisconsin governorship. I guess Snot Walker is trying to win for a third time. And he's in some serious trouble there, I think.
Did you call him Snot or
Snot? Snot
Walker. Yeah, I did start that one.
I caught that.
I did start that one.
Well,
that's funny.
You got to use his proper name. I guess they're calling him. You know, I guess one of the main issues, a big local issue there, is in the rural areas. But what he's done with the state budget is he shifted the resources away from the local area. So they're like, the former roads in the local areas, they're scraping the blacktop off them and making them gravel again. And so there's all sorts of potholes all over the place, and they're starting to call them. What are they calling them? Scott holes or whatever? Or, instead of potholes, Scott holes, they're calling them, which is kind of interesting. So, I mean, a local issue like that can definitely sway an election. I mean, like, especially for, mayoral races. I know that one reason that, mayors of New York or Chicago were not reelected is because they failed to respond properly to, plowing the streets when there were major snows. That's what cost Jane Bird of Chicago her job, just not responding to local concerns. So, we like to think of these elections as nationalized, but, the local concerns are important as well. You can't overlook that,
I'm going to interrupt with a beer porn update courtesy of Steve in New York. This may not resonate with you, Steve. It's not Bud Light.
It's okay, Bob.
That's okay. I'm just being a dick. Gordo.
Raw dog.
Yeah. I'm sipping a Bell's Expedition Stout. It's a deep, dark Russian Imperial Stout topping out at an alcohol by volume of 10.5. Whee!
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a couple of those, Steve, and you can float home, buddy.
Oh my goodness!
Have
Budweiser
one for me,
who?
Steve. Have an extra for me, man. And shoot some pool afterwards. The balls will all go in, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Now, Bell's. Wow. Bell's is like out of Michigan, I think, and they make very good beer, very good beer indeed. But I had to work in a Bud Light joke there for a minute. Sorry, Steve. Just.
I got something here. This might be kind of funny. That commemorative coin that they minted with Trump and Kim on it, Kim Jong-un on it? You can still get it at the White House gift shop, I guess, even though it's something. And what I really want is I want the New Yorker's version of that coin. Instead of the leaders facing each other, they're facing away from each other. And the scowl of Trump is accentuated, as is his hair. And it says President Donald J. Trump, and it says Supreme Little Rocket Man of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And at the very top of the coin, it says Peace Out.
Well, I heard that they took the original and cut it in two and mailed off half of it. Kim Jong-un gets the Trump half, and Geezer Disgustus is going to wear the Kim Jong-un half on a chain around his neck just to remember their special time.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, I found out a little bit more about Dude real quick.
Okay.
Dude wants us all to know that he is the voice of his generation.
And who appointed?
Yeah, he did.
Did you hear that, Bob?
No.
Who exactly appointed him as the voice of his generation?
He did.
Was it maybe Bob Dylan?
No, he did.
Who did that?
He did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, being a voice of a generation is a major burden. I mean, Bob Dylan didn't want to be that, you know? He rejected that idea.
Yeah, but he is, so, you know.
He is.
I think if I was of that generation, I'd be a little pissed.
Yeah. Jeez.
But, well, we all have our crosses to bear. Sometimes, you know, it's one thing to bear a cross that you're made to carry. It's another thing to pick one up just because you had a yen to cross bear.
Well, if he's bearing his cross, I hope he's getting paid a lot of money by the Koch brothers and, you know, Americans for Prosperity and, you know.
Well, I had a note in from Flavio a little bit ago, subject line, about Dude. You know, says Flavio, I've come to look for keywords for tip-offs for why a person is saying what they're saying. And Dude sounds like he gets his keywords from Fox. Just identity politics. You hear that all the time on Fox, don't you? Yeah, a shill, an agent provocateur, or just a very stupid dude. And meanwhile, quiz coming in from Scott and Punky, who, behind the scenes, is really running the show? A, the Illuminati, B, the Freemasons, C, the Jews, pronounced Jews, D, our powerful corporate masters, E, the military-industrial complex, F, none of the above, G, all of the above, H. Wait, do you mean to imply someone's actually running things? That gets a cowbell. Yep.
Very creative, Scott. Good job. So I actually have a concert to go to tomorrow night, if you could believe it, even though I'm trying to prepare for trial.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's Lynyrd Skynyrd, their farewell tour.
Which one? Because they've had several.
Oh, have they? I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
That's not like the Who's many farewell tours over 20 years, is it?
No, this is just, you know, Skynyrd was a largish band, and they've formed up in various incarnations, so this will be the farewell tour of these two members of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Right after the crash, they formed Rossington Collins. Do you remember that, Bob?
Oh, yeah, the Rossington Collins Band. And
yeah, they were great. I've seen them.
Well, weren't there a Skynyrd or two in 38 Special?
I believe you're right, sir. Or a brother or somebody, a relation somehow. I believe you're correct.
My recollection is I think somebody from Skynyrd wrote a big song that 38 Special did. Maybe that was the crossover. And they were friends as well, I think, you know?
The Hold On Loosely song, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. I think so. Yeah. So, no, it should be a good song. I figure, you know, they still have a lot of the original members, don't they, Bob, or not?
Most of them are croaked.
Oh, have they? Okay.
Yeah, Billy Powell's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know,
and
we'll
Frank,
see what
and
like.
Honestly, it was all over at the crash. It just really was.
Agreed.
I mean, you can go out and play the songs and everything, but the motivating philosophies and the attitudes died in the crash.
What year was that? Was it like late 70s?
76, 77.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and then strangely, I remember the album Street Survivor was released, and there were like flames on the cover of
Back
then, which was obviously.
Well, and the eponymous video is to catch their. It was, God, they were opening for The Who or something in England. And just tore the, I mean, just absolutely burned it up. And the crowd were like, we haven't seen anything like this. And it was a big moment. I'm pretty sure it was England. Note coming in from Renee. Just a thought. Trump, who's perennially trying to be best, working in the melanoma slogan there. Nice work, Renee. Trump, who's perennially trying to be best at something, usually egotistical, could easily secure his place in TV history as the highest ratings getter by starring in the Traitorgate hearings. The only question is if he'd take the bait and just let Mueller proceed. He would have some of the biggest ratings of all time. But then again, I think he'd have even bigger ratings if they announced that he was going to make a big announcement at, say, 7 p.m. on a Friday night, and he came out and resigned. Huh? Yeah. The other thing, in that op-ed piece by the two Naval Academy grads, one of the things that grabbed me was that where they referenced that at the same time, Donald Trump was preparing to begin a program called The Apprentice. Has anybody, and I can't imagine that they haven't, has anybody worked that angle? The fact that we hired an apprentice president? Because, see, I remember when Barack Obama came on, and all the Republicans said, we don't have time for on-the-job training. He's got no experience. He was like a member of the U.S. Senate for 4.5 seconds, and before that, he was Illinois senator for 2.5 minutes, and before that, he was a community organizer. We don't have time for no on-the-job training.
Yeah, but you got to remember, he had a brain.
Well, you got to remember, it was also, you know, act play.
I didn't see the act play. I saw the brain.
Yeah, well, I saw and heard the brain too, but. For all the people, he ain't got no experience. They saw the act play.
Well, I see the stupid in Trump before I see anything else.
Oh, it glows in the dark. So, I mean, and you know, take comfort, Tracy. Barack Obama's probably got more than 21% West European. And things are working out pretty good for him.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, I also hear he eats mayonnaise.
Eats mayonnaise, yeah, well.
On his French fries.
Oh!
I can't wait to see their Netflix stuff.
Oh, I think you just hurt Tracy, Steve. Oh. Mayonnaise on his French fries. But the sad thing is, mayonnaise on French fries is freaking delicious. Said the guy whose, you know, genetic test would be like, it'd just, you know, they'd just send me back a plain white sheet of paper and with the word guess written on it, you know?
Well, I like mayonnaise and ketchup better than either or separate. Mix.
No, they work. They work.
So I've got a question here. You came back, Tracy, as 21% Western European, is that right?
Yep.
Why is that not delineated according to where in Europe you are, like German, French, you know, that kind
know.
Of thing?
That would be interesting to find with breakdown.
Yeah, I wonder why that's not more specific because, you know, I know I'm Western European. And Scots Irish as well. But I just don't know the exact percentages. I mean, I say I'm 3/4 German and 1/8 Irish, 1/8 Scottish, but who knows, you know?
Yeah, nope, just 21%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And you migrated to the U.S. Your ancestry migrated to the U.S. from Virginia, it sounds like, huh?
Mm-hmm. Virginia. Okay. It's like Virginia. And I mean, but the funny thing is, from what I know of my history, as far as my family's concerned, I don't know anything about Virginia. It's Louisiana and Arkansas.
Hmm. Well, just
remember, Tracy, when they talk about it in the history books in Texas, your ancestors came here as workers and decided to stay.
Jesus Christ! Oh God!
Now, are you saying there's a Virginia to Louisiana link?
Well, it's just Virginia. They don't say, and they say Southern United States, but basically starting in Virginia. So.
That's fascinating.
That is fascinating. But like I said, I don't know of any of my family. I know about my mom and my great-great-grandmother where they're from. You know, my great-great-grandmother was from Louisiana. But I don't know where, like, my great-grandfather was from or, his people. So there, you know, that could be the Virginia part or whatever. I just know part of my mom's side of the family. And my dad was born in in Missouri, because my father was born in Jefferson City, Missouri. But again, I don't know anything about Virginia. So that's, you know, once I start filling out my family tree, maybe I'll start linking.
You're gonna start finding out some fascinating things.
Apparently, I have 44 fourth cousins that have done the test.
Wow.
344 fourth cousins.
Wow. Is that a lot?
Well, that's on Ancestry DNA.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, wow. So there's a bunch of fourth cousins.
You'll run across all kinds of little mysteries. I've got one and I've tried to track it down. But I haven't. Two of my grandparents, a grandmother and a grandfather. I think it's my sixth removed grandmother and grandfather, Kincaids. She died at the age of 48 on February the 10th, 1843. He died at the same age on February the 13th, 1843, 3 days later. So some sort of sickness was moving through that little pioneer community. And it took them both, but it did not take their 25-year-old son.
That is wild.
And then it just gets weird. And I found, now it's said in my family history that the son married a daughter of a guy who was known as Long Billy McClung. He was known for being what's funny about Long Billy McClung?
Nothing. It just stands on its own.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Down into the gutter, 9 minutes past eight. Okay.
I wonder if Long Billy is somehow related to Johnny Wadd. Is that possible?
Sorry, no. Different. Okay. They were decent people back then, Rick.
or the guy Clarence Thomas admired, but we
Long Dong, I think, yeah, Long Dong Silver.
No, he was. The funny thing is, the name McClung comes from the Gaelic Lang, and also the Germanic Lang, which means long or tall. So he was Long Billy McTall. They were tall people.
Well, I'll be damned.
And he was known for being in excess of 6 feet tall and a brilliant conversationalist.
Did he have his own internet program by chance, Bob?
No, but he did stand out on the back porch and holler a lot. He was a devout Presbyterian. But then I found a 1904 book of research into the McClungs, because they're all over the place in this country. And this McClung in Pittsburgh had put together an extensive, I mean, apparently he'd spent decades of his life pulling it together. And I found it online and just started reading little passages here and there. Agnes and I will do the Mike and Carol Brady thing, you know, propped up in the bed and at the end of the day and just reading stuff back and forth to each other. It's Virginia. It's well before the Civil War. And I was reading this at 11:30 midnight, so I read, and these were just casual quips that were passed along. And I mean, the guy wasn't recording them positively or negatively. He was simply cataloging them. Okay. But the book was published in 1904, and just sickening degrees of racism. I mean, disgusting. And I would read these things to Agnes and be like, how? Because you know, hopefully some of us are far enough removed from those times and those attitudes that you just can't get your head around how anybody could be that vicious. But they were. And then you look into today's news and you find out that a guy got to cop a plea after terrorizing a family. I mean, it's just basically walked away with a slap on the wrist. I mean, this guy used it, and I mean, we're talking modern time, okay? Used a taser cane to torment a child, and then when he was finally busted for it, in his sentencing, Rick, imagine this is your client, okay? At his sentencing hearing, he looked at the judge and said, "See, Hitler had the right idea, the wrong people." Oh, I'm sorry. He said this to the FBI.
Oh, jeez.
"Hitler had the right idea, the wrong people. Should have gassed." Guess what word?
It has to do with ginger and two G's and whatever.
Yeah,
that is.
Right. It's not ginger. Yeah.
Rhymes with ginger, and it's not, you know.
Yeah, he used his zap cane on a child. This, of course, happened, no, not in Alabama, not in Mississippi. Utah, and they had to chase him into Arizona and extradite him back to Utah to try him. He said, "I don't want nothing to do with him. I even told him when I moved in, I said, I don't want to live next to any of them. I told them at the complex. I just don't like seeing them or being around them. Dangerous people. Very violent." Anybody want to guess how this fucker votes? Oh, we can't talk about that, though, because that must be identity.
Republican.
That's identity politics.
Oh, that would offend the dude.
Yeah.
Can't talk about that. God forbid.
Well, after everything that he did, engaging in the speech he did against a 7-year-old child, and then tasering the kid's daddy when the daddy said, "Quit doing that to my boy," he got 9 months on a federal hate crime with a dangerous weapon charge.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, you know the federal sentencing guidelines, Rick. How the hell does that happen?
I have no idea. Was this in the federal sentencing guidelines are now only advisory, so the judges have a lot more power to vary from the recommendations. But this was a federal civil rights conviction, essentially.
Federal hate
crime. Violation of civil rights? Hate crimes, okay.
With a dangerous weapon.
Against a boy, a minor.
Yeah. Well, it was against the daddy. He was just screaming at the boy. He used the zap cane on daddy.
Okay, okay. And daddy was African-American, I take it.
Yes.
I don't understand that, you know? I mean, you'd think you'd at least get a few years, if nothing else, you know? I mean, I don't know.
The NAACP Salt Lake City chapter said that it was a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
And Dave Backman, the criminal chief of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Salt Lake City, said, "Seems like he hasn't heard a thing. It was painful to sit there through the sentencing and to hear what he had to say. He's obviously racist, and we're very concerned that he's not learned from this."
Talking about the judge or the father? Sounds like the judge as well.
Well, yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. Ah, I tell you, this world is just full of... Well, this country especially seems to be full of deplorables, you know?
Right, but I mean, I do. I get a little pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
At stories like this, and then I remember this, the stuff that I've read of these precious twee so-called progressives who say that we can't focus on identity politics. You know, I guess they want daddy here. I guess they want daddy to sit down and try to understand this racist prick's economic anxiety.
Yeah, well, yeah, that'll do a lot of good, you know?
Yeah, good luck with all that, right?
Yeah, right. It's like talking to a wall, someone like that. Ugh.
And see, I haven't read to you the worst of it.
This case, you mean?
Yeah. And
okay.
And I won't.
Okay.
It's sickening.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. I'm sitting there reading something that was said in 1830, and I'm looking at my wife, and I'm saying, this is disgusting. I mean, even in 1830, how could people be this way? Because we know that in 1830 everybody wasn't this way, because the abolition movement was a going concern in 1830.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of the abolition movement, I just went to the Getty Center. There's a display of early American photography, and there's some portraits of President Lincoln taken by Matthew Brady. And also Civil War scenes. It was just fabulous. It was in connection with my son's, one of my son's school assignments. He's taken a photography class. And there was also another guy, Kenneth Gardner, I think. He's a Scottishman who immigrated to the U.S. and was hired by Brady. But it was amazing how the Abraham Lincoln of February 1860 looked compared to the Abraham Lincoln of, like, February of 1865.
Yeah, you know? He changes dramatically. Of course, he got literally deathly ill almost immediately after delivering the Gettysburg Address.
Okay.
And we don't know what it was. It may have been, it was probably more than likely smallpox. But he was a sick man during the entirety of his presidency, in large part because the doctors were poisoning him.
Oh.
He took a patent medicine remedy called Blue Mass.
Oh, geez.
That was made primarily of mercury.
I was going to say that, yeah, yeah. I was going to say either mercury or silver iodine or something like that.
Probably had a little of both, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Meanwhile, oh, and by the way, thanks to Kim and Malin having met Nydia's challenge, well, they tripled their money, as it were, because Nydia followed up with, if the challenge was met, Nydia was going to follow up with another 100. So that leaves us, and that's where we've stood since that happened at the beginning of the program, at $210 to go to finish the month and finish the week and be able to have fundraising free radio all next week. So that's where all that stands. So if anybody wants to help out in the next 39 minutes or so, that would be freaking awesome. Otherwise, we have to knock down the other 210 on Memorial Day or Tuesday or whatever. I don't know. I might take a long weekend. Probably not. I never do that. But no, did you catch the bombing in Canada?
No.
Yeah, the American disease continues to metastasize. Somebody walked in, two somebodies, walked into an Indian restaurant in Canada and set down a bomb and walked back out. 15 people were injured. And last I read, the authorities are still trying to find who done it. They've got some video, but they haven't, as of the last I saw, hadn't caught it. Reuters reported. Yes, Barky?
Oh, I just was going to say, you're talking about the immigrant disease?
No, I'm talking about the racism disease.
Well, it's most, seeing how Canada has a lot of immigrants, they also racism immigrants.
Right. More than a dozen people wounded. Happened about 10:30 p.m. last night. 15 people taken to hospital. 3 of them critically injured. It was in the city of Mississauga. And I don't know where that is. Mississauga.
Were there any people that were wearing turbans or anything?
Well, it was an Indian restaurant. Nobody's claimed responsibility. Nobody knows the motive. But they do know that one of them was a guy in his mid-20s, stocky, wearing dark blue jeans and a dark zip-up hoodie pulled over his head with black cloth covering his face. And the second was a skinny guy, faded blue jeans, gray T-shirt, dark zip-up hoodie over his head, too, also with his face covered.
So it sounds like Antifa, Bob. I think that's what Fox will tell us. Antifa's at it again, spreading terrorism now to Canada, right?
God, I wish, but no. Mississauga sits on Lake Ontario, about 20 miles west of Toronto, population 700,000 people. The restaurant Bombay Bell is an Indian restaurant chain in the metro area.
Hmm. I love Indian food, Bob.
Oh,
it's delicious.
Me too.
Yeah.
Guy James is particularly fond of walking into Indian restaurants and asking for hamburgers. Took a while for me to explain to him that he could get lamb there, but he wasn't likely to get a no, and to be fair, there was a Muslim Indian restaurant. This happened in D.C. around the corner, or well, actually in a different part of town, where you could get beef. But that was the freezing cold night of Barack Obama's first inauguration when Guy James and I went in search of a good steak in an Indian restaurant. No.
I remember that I remember the crowd size. That inauguration, the crowd size was very small compared to Trump's.
It was tiny. It was hardly anybody there at all. The metro was like totally empty.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
So let me get this right, though. I know the whole thing with the sacred cows and so forth in India, the Hindus. Aren't the true Hindus vegetarian?
Largely, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And you know what? That's a vegetarian cuisine I can totally get.
Yeah.
It's all just so damn good.
Oh, it is.
But spice when you, you know, you move a little bit east and you get into Thailand and they start taking those curries and pouring it all over chicken and pork and and then then life gets good for me.
So do you have any restaurants like that in your neck of the woods or not?
There's
Indian or Thai.
There's
or...
one decent Indian place down in Charleston. There was one in Beckley. Didn't last long at all. But we're lucky. We've got a little you get what she cooks that day Thai place about 5 miles from me.
Oh, I think I remember
and,
you mentioned
and
that.
And I adore it. I eat it once a week or so. You know, you go there for lunch, you get this huge plate of food for like $6.
Oh, geez.
She makes it. She just makes a killer Massaman curry and an awesome Penang curry. And she tells me that if I call ahead, she'll make me a green curry.
Oh.
And because green curry is my favorite.
So is she a Thai lady?
Yeah, she's from Thailand. Yeah.
Okay.
And she does her own version of the stretched tea with the sweetened condensed milk and the spices, the chai spices.
Mm.
And serves it cold over ice. Nothing like it.
Oh boy, that sounds good.
Hand rolls her own spring rolls every morning. Makes her own little pork, steamed pork dumplings, and makes the most amazing pot of tom yum soup you're ever gonna eat.
Mm.
I just haven't talked her into doing satay with that magnificent peanut sauce and that little vinaigrette with the chilies in it yet, but I'm working on it.
Mm. Wow.
But she said, we're friends. And she says, anything, any Thai food you want, you call me an hour ahead and I'll make it for you.
Jeez.
We're friends.
That's like service with a smile. That's awesome.
Oh, it is. It is. And,
Yeah. I love to give small businesses and people who appreciate the business, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean, she's totally local. She survives on the local tourist economy because she's just down the road from one of the big whitewater rafting compounds. You can just walk there.
Right.
And she makes as much as she makes, and when it's gone, she's done. It's closed.
Get there
or be square.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really really good, but I'm looking forward to seeing how this turkey breast comes out tomorrow because it may turn out to be a disaster. Sometimes the first run through is not so good, but I have high hopes for it.
It'll be great, Bob. That's the way you got to look at it.
Well, the smoked turkey breast. I mean, Tracy, are you listening to this? Smoked turkey breast on sourdough. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Because I was listening to you about the smoked turkey breast, and I'm thinking we have ribs, and I'm thinking about for Memorial Day we're going to do ribs. And I was thinking about doing it low and slow because I did that once before. Oh my God, I forget how many hours it took, but it was so good.
You know the funny thing is with the ribs, the way I'm doing ribs now, with the acorn cooker and never getting it above 225. My ribs are 4 hours. It's just done. 4 hours. Boom. And
okay.
and they come out fabulous. Even if you only go for like one of the little tabletop acorns, you really ought to try one of these things, Tracy. I mean, as I've said before, once you get to where you can control the heat with the dampers and the chimney and the airflow and everything, it's almost foolproof. And that last rack of ribs that I did by brining them with the pickling spice, and the Szechuan peppercorns, I've never done better. They were awesome.
I'm sorry, I was looking at our Sparky got me thinking about our California Legend Primary coming up, and I'm looking at my ballad. I'm like, Jesus.
Was it like 15 pages?
I'm like, well, the thing is, like, you know, I'm looking at the judicial, and I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are, and I'm just trying to figure out how do you, you know, how do you know how to vote for judge? Because you don't know who their party affiliation is or anything like that.
Yeah, and that's like, a dirty bit of business, too. I have the right to know if my judge, if a woman running for judge, is a Republican POS. I have the right to mm-hmm. know that.
Exactly.
But they hide it from you. You can't go somewhere and, I mean, I guess if you've got open records in California, I guess you could call and try to find their voter registration. But that's a hell of a lot of work to have to go through.
Because there's like 11 judges coming up for a vote. 11, not judges, but yeah, but 11 positions. And it's like, and these are Superior Court. It's like, Jesus. How do you, like I said, I'd like to know, you know, if these, any of these are Trump supporters, because I'm not voting for them. It's not like back in the day, you know, if they voted for Bush, you'd be like, whatever. But now, I'm not voting for somebody that voted, that voted for Trump. Because it's just, there's no middle ground. There's no.
I just look around, see who's got the most yard signs, and I know they're probably a Republican.
Ooh, math.
Yeah, math.
Well, I mean
they're thinking of poor Democrats don't afford a lot of yard sign.
No. Not in, like you said, not in the primary election or anything like that. The yard signs will come up for the general for November.
And you know, especially in a place like California, Tracy, you're absolutely right. These judicial elections matter.
Yes, they do.
I'm looking here, and of course this would probably fall into the federal court more than the state court, but the ACLU put up a post last month actually, about the fact that an 18-month-old child was ripped away from his mother by ICE. 29-year-old mother from Honduras, detained in the notorious T. Don Hutto Detention Center, otherwise known as Concentration Camp in Taylor, Texas. Her baby is in San Antonio, 120 miles away. And, you know, Jeff Sessions said in the last couple of weeks that, by God, this is going to be the new normal. And it's sickening.
I have no idea who any of these. I guess I have no, like you said, and federal judges are appointed by, they're appointed by the president, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's frightening. Yeah, I don't even know how to research these people. I guess I could just Google them and see, you know, what is that going to tell me about them?
Exactly.
You'll find out more information than you know already.
That's true. How many?
Because I know the big thing up here. One guy that's running, and I think is a Democrat, is giving the other person, or no, he might be the Republican. He's giving the other person a lot of. Because she was appointed by Governor Brown and didn't live in the county to begin with.
Yeah, that's another, you know. So it's, I mean, because I'm still like, you know, we have a lot of stuff coming up in the state, like you said. I think you, Rick, about, you know, state superintendent, and I think Tuck is a school charter person. I think he's being supported by the Waltons and the Cokes. So I mean, like I said, I'm not. I haven't done any. I got to do because I have a mail-in ballot. So I'm just gonna do it and mail it in. So I don't have to worry about missing, you know, not being, you know, missing the voting date. It's what? How many people? Oh, Rick, you still haven't looked at your ballot yet, huh?
No, I haven't yet, Tracy. No, No. Okay, bye, Brian. Yeah, I was talking to my son there. No, I haven't. You haven't either, right?
No, I'm looking at it now.
Okay.
I'm looking at the state measures. There's not that many state measures this time. There's only five.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm always suspicious of those state measures because of, you know, who's behind it, who's paying for it, you know, who paid for the signatures to be collected, you know, who's supporting it, who's against it, you know.
Well, that's I never forget when I took poli sci a million years ago. One of the things, especially propositions and stuff like that, one of the things he said
mm-hmm.
was, look who is supporting it, because they make these propositions and these state measures so that, you know, you can't read them. Anybody that doesn't have a law degree has no idea what the hell they're talking with, you know, because it's just so, you know, verbose. But he said, go all the way to the bottom of it and see who supported it.
Yeah.
And then you'll know, you know, who, you know, who's the one who's put the money into it and all that. And you can see that, too, like on the small print
mm-hmm.
on when you're watching the, you know, the stuff, you know, on television, but it goes so fast you can't.
That's harder. That it's much easier when it's on the ballot measure pamphlet.
One of the places I go is the California Labor Federation site.
There you go.
California what?
Labor Federation. See, you know, I used to be in the union and being an organizer and everything. I know all this shit. My local union also gives me information.
Yeah, that's a good source.
I used to go, you know, because they have people, California Labor Federation has people that research the propositions.
Yeah. Yeah, you can also, and look at their effect on workers and on labor and so forth. You can also, Tracy, look at the League of Conservation Voters. They still have a pretty good website, I think, you know, to see what their position is on the candidates, on the propositions, that kind of thing. It's a shame they don't do voter registration anymore. Ever since that whole fiasco with Acorn, there's no organizations that want to stick their head out and do that, or at least not that many, you know?
Definitely.
Which is,
another suggestion coming in via Scott and Punky. Down here in San Diego, we've got a great alternative paper that comes out weekly, the San Diego City Beat. The folks who produce it are progressives, and whenever there's a chance to vote, they go all out with candidate coverage and a special election edition of the paper. They do their homework and even make decent endorsements. Scott says, I don't know how reliable or if there even is one, but if you can find a similar alternative paper up in L.A. That's trustworthy in their political discernment, you'll find that a tremendous help. Scott
okay.
says, I filled out my ballot last night and mailed it today. So is there like an alternative weekly city paper?
The
LA Weekly,
the LA Weekly is
the one that that I read sometimes.
They're pretty progressive, especially so. I wonder if they have endorsements and whatnot and so forth.
They probably do. I mean, what I use the LA Weekly for mostly is concert announcements and things like that. You know, find out what's going on in town. You know. And they also review a lot of restaurants, and then there's a few writers who write like political pieces. There's a guy who used to be a fairly well-known musician who now just does spoken word tours. I forget the guy's name. He hates Trump. He's written a lot of op-eds about Trump. But yeah, that's a pretty good source of information. I bet if you look at that, they would probably have some, you know, recommendations. Probably this next week's edition, I would imagine, because the election is really quickly approaching here. Probably this week's edition, actually.
Yeah, probably this week.
Is my guess. Yeah, because nobody's paying attention once Memorial Day hits, you know. So, Yeah, I'll be.
Do you have yours by mail? Or do you go in and vote?
I like the traditional thing. I like to go in and vote. So I'll just plan on, going in and voting. I'm just trying to think here. What do I have June 5th? I got something going on. Oh, I've got a hearing in Superior Court June 5th. So maybe I should vote. Maybe I should vote early. Or just, you know, drop my ballot off at the precinct, you know?
Yeah, they do have early. When is the early? We do have early voting here.
Yeah, I think you have to get a. I think you have to ask for a ballot in the mail. I know my son gets a ballot.
Yep, you have to do that by a certain date, or you won't get one.
Yeah, I think it's too late by now. Yeah, I've got a hearing at 8:30 in the morning. I don't know if the polls are even open.
They open at earlier 7, don't
than 8. Well, I guess I can always vote before the polls close, right? Just get my ass home earlier than usual.
Well, polls close up here at 8 o'clock. I know.
Yeah, I think it's 8 o'clock. So
they close at 8.
That's not too bad. I mean, in as much as I make it to my pool league by like 8:30, 8:15, 8:30, because I have to drive 30 miles to get back home from where I am on the west side here. So.
Oh, you can
drop your ballot off at any precinct. You know that, right?
Huh?
You can drop your ballot off at any precinct.
Yeah, but I don't have a ballot though. That's the problem.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Bob, what were you saying there?
You mentioned your pool league. And that reminded me of something, and this is just a little bit perhaps on the lighter side. It's a pity Steve from Georgistan isn't still here. This is the kind of thing
went bowling.
He's about to bowl his second consecutive 300, I hear.
Well, did you hear about the guy who bowled 301? you ever hear of anybody bowling 300 and lose?
Yeah.
Ah, bowling. Yeah, there you go. No, you mentioned your pool league. And, you know, this is just a tale of going down the internet rabbit hole and just how awful that can become. I don't know exactly what led me there, but I read some story somewhere about, you know, a water polo competition. Well, I'm not that conversant with the sport of water polo. So I thought, hey, I'll run over to YouTube, and I'll check out some water polo.
What made you do that?
100% boring white guy. I mean, I don't know. But
you know they play water polo in the Olympics, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. I never pay attention to the Olympics, but, you know, something just lit the little curiosity neuron in my brain, and it's like, because I don't know the rules, I don't know how you win, I don't know how you lose, there are two nets, I mean, I don't know why they don't call it, from what I saw, I don't know why they don't call it water soccer, you know, because polo involves horses, and I didn't see anybody riding each other's back. Well, kind of.
Shut up.
And what?
You mean water hockey?
Well, okay.
The correct name of a sport where you have two goals on either end and people try to score is hockey. That other one is nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
It's water hockey as opposed to ice hockey. That's funny.
Well, water hockey. Or ice hockey.
Or, you know, molten ice hockey. But here's the thing.
They keep the water at 33 degrees, right, Bob? That's the idea of molten water ice hockey.
But here's the thing. I found out because apparently everything in the world has some aspect of it that's filthy. And I mentioned it to Agnes, and she was like, well, yeah. I simply wanted to know what water polo looked like.
You can't touch the bottom. That's another thing.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you have to tread water. You cannot touch the bottom.
And they look like they swim pretty fast and stuff. And then everybody goes to one end of the pool and stops. And they throw the ball around, and then somebody throws it at the goalie's head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And occasionally it'll go into the net. But then I found out that there is some sort of dark web subgenre of water polo kink.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, is nothing sacred?
No, I blame Trump.
And there, and I got deluged with 1,000 links to water polo wedgies. And then apparently there's an underwater cam, I guess, to make sure that they aren't fouling by touching the bottom or anything.
But that's actually a strategy.
Wedgies?
You give a wedgie to the opposing team.
Well, apparently so, and yeah. There's a bunch of sick fuckers sitting in basements getting off on it.
Well, you know, and sick fuckers who watch the women's gymnastics and drool over the young ladies, right?
Leave Dr. Nasser out of this.
Bob, you.
And the way they get titled and stuff, but then I saw the underwater cams and damn, women's water polo is meaner and more vicious than roller derby ever even dreamed of being. And I feel horrible. I felt like I needed to shower in bleach. I mean, I wasn't getting, you know, worked up or anything, but I'm sitting there going, these women are beating the shit out of each other.
And so they're basically kicking the hell out of each other underneath the water. Is that the idea?
There's not a lot of force in kicking. No, it's what Steve said. They're grabbing hold of the bottom of the women's swimsuit and trying to pull it up over their fucking heads.
Oh, jeez.
And I feel like a total naive. I mean,
it's a jungle out there. We don't all live in Appalachia, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm afraid to ever leave now.
I'm sorry.
No, little thunder in the chat room's working with me. I didn't even know horses could swim, you know? As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. I was just amazed. I mean, as a sport, you know, I watched for a while. I was trying to figure out the rules. I kept hearing somebody blow a whistle, but nobody would quit playing. I was horribly confused.
It's like soccer. In soccer, you don't, people blow a whistle, you don't stop playing.
Well, that's true. Maybe it's the slow-moving character of it that had me thrown. But
the whistle is a possession changer. What you'll see is every time they blow the whistle, the possession will change.
Okay, why does the possession change?
Because it's a foul, but it's not a foul severe enough to stop playing or to, like, have a penalty shot.
Okay, so do they have to, like, play shorthanded like in hockey sometimes?
No, it's just a possession change.
Okay. Wait, how does an innocent boy from Dayton, Ohio know about water polo, Steve?
I've been playing hockey since I was 7 years old, so anything that resembles that, I've taken it upon myself to learn it.
But there you go.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. But then,
except for soccer, which is like I said, it's a communist sport, and it's a plot to sap and purify our precious bodily fluids. So we don't play that.
Well, of course it is. And okay, well now I've started something awful. There's a water polo video in the chat room now.
Oh, jeez. Bob, well, I was going to say, Bob, you know, those two other words, but that would be infringing. So
that's gimmick infringement, yes.
Oh, dear, dear Bob.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it works well for you, Steve.
Yes, it does. And I'm sorry I'm joining late tonight, but I had to enjoy those two Russian Imperial Stouts, which were just beautiful.
And that's like...
You're speaking remarkably well for having had two strong beers, Steve.
Well, and those two Russian Imperial Stouts were the equivalent of what? Like 19 Miller Lights?
Well, or probably 19 Bud Lights as well.
Yeah, it was 20... Well, there were 21 proof, but they're only 9 ounces, so they're not very big glasses.
Oh, okay. So you're talking 3/4 of a beer. So it's like still probably like it's 10 probably Bud Lights.
Yeah, it's probably 3 or 4 Bud Lights, yeah.
Yeah.
But they actually have a taste. That's the kicker.
Oh, no, a Russian yeah, and yeah, it's got a maltiness to it. Yeah.
Maltiness, nutty, little bit of bourbon barrelish.
Right, and some hipster with access to a front end loader and a ton of hops didn't go, dude, let's make it a Russian Imperial Stout IPA.
Yeah, no.
Man, I've been rough on the hipsters tonight. I'm sorry.
Well, dude deserves everything he gets, man. That guy is like, you know. I mean, he doesn't even talk like a real person, you know. Just
hey, now quit that. He's the voice of his generation.
Like I'm the voice of all black people.
Oh, that you are, Tracy.
No, but we forced that on you, Tracy.
Well, wait a minute, Tracy. I have a question.
Yes.
So, am I the voice of all gay people?
Well, I'm a lesbian, so wait.
Yeah, I know. I'm just we gotta work this out.
Okay, so wait. Okay, you could be the voice of the gay men, and I could be the voice of all lesbians.
No, cool. Tracy, you're the voice of all black lesbians. Steve, you're the lesbians. Voice of all white gay men.
Oh, my God.
We have to be identity politics here, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, after all. And I can be the voice of all honest attorneys. All white honest attorneys.
All one of them.
Yeah.
Well, that's new. And then you.
No. Steve, okay, no, you have to be the voice of white straight lawyers on the West Coast.
Wait a minute. You're all of a sudden putting a burden on me of the white gay man and the white.
Oh, yeah. Oh no, white gay East Coast lawyers. You got that one, too.
Well, we somehow have to work pool playing.
You want somebody
to
share the burden,
Bob.
You got to bring them into the group, man.
Okay.
We have to work pool players into this as well, Bob, since I play pool, you know?
Steve plays
hockey, so no, he's like...
Here's the deal, Rick. When I was a kid, I had my grandmother's stepfather. We had this beautiful old antique billiards table, so we called it billiards when I was a kid.
Right.
And he had these gorgeous, it was a mahogany table, and he had the leather pockets, the leather, you know what I mean, the leather woven pockets with a little gold fringe around them.
Yeah, where the balls just drop into there and stay. They don't, like, roll along, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen those.
Such a beautiful, oh, my God, it was a beautiful, beautiful billiard table. But anyway, I'm digressing.
Probably a single slate.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So gorgeous. So gorgeous.
Was it fun to play on? Did it have good felt and stuff? Good roll?
Well, you know what? I was probably, how old was I? Between 10 and 12? I mean, I wasn't that old, but in tables that I'd seen subsequent to that, it was evident that it was pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of tables, I was on a really weird table. It used to be at this it's this bar that used to be like a meat market, and the floors are like slanting from the back to the front, okay, a slight slant. And so the balls roll in unpredictable ways. My ball was like going uphill. It would have been uphill into a pocket, and it was like rolling, rolling, rolling into the pocket. It got to the pocket and then rolled backwards. It's like it looked like it for sure was going in, and then it went back, and you know, and it evened out because my opponent ended up having a weird roll as well that ended up like costing her the game. So you know, but you know.
And this is league play.
Yeah. The leagues I'm in are mixed doubles, not mixed doubles, but it's mixed, gender wise. So you know, guys.
I'm not concerned about that. I'm just concerned about. Who's running this league that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's based on local bars. They basically have the tables they have.
You know, you can't always play with the pool table you wish you had, but you have to play with the one that you actually have, you know?
Oh, by, so, wait. I have to interrupt. We have an objection. We have an objection on the floor. Matt in San Francisco. Stop telling me who my gay voice is, Bob. Okay, Matt, you're the oh no, there'll probably be riots. I was gonna say you're like the official voice of West Coast gay men in, but well, you know what, you are
in
Matt.
San Francisco.
You just are West Coast gay men, dadgummit.
Hey, I'm headed up there for my trial on Tuesday. Actually, I'm going up on Monday. Flying up there midday because it's the only flight out on Memorial Day, and I'll be meeting with the witnesses and preparing and what have you. And then Tuesday morning it'll be the trial.
Well, all I can tell you is it's up to you whether you tell your client this or not. But if he looks at the judge at the end of it all and says, "Your Honor, it's not about the money," just go somewhere and drink, okay?
Well, he's the $20 million man, we'll call him. He was paid $20 million of compensation in a particular year, and the state didn't like that, so they've challenged the ability of the corporation to deduct that salary he got or the bonus he got in that year. So that's the issue. It's a lot of expert witnesses, essentially. Two expert witnesses going head-to-head, whether this man is reasonable or not, you know, so that's the issue. So... you know, it's not rocket science, you know.
Oh, and just
20 million.
Huh?
Wait a minute. Because I heard that whispered shit.
What's that? 20 million?
No, you didn't.
Is that what he was paid?
That's what the company paid him as a bonus in 2008.
That was a bonus.
That was the bonus, Tracy.
Well, no, actually the bonus was $19 million. That salary was $1 million.
Okay, so yeah. this is where you move from shit to fuck. we're running out of time, but just one. Yeah, I just got one of those little moments that let me know that Agnes and I were not complete failures of as parents. I just received a photograph from our eldest daughter. It's of the back of an SUV, and considering all the things we've talked about, by the way, a school shooting was stopped today in Talibandiana by a school teacher, a biology teacher.
This bitch slapped the...
Who just walked up, took the gun away from the and this is a journalism phrase I've never seen before, the student gunman, walked up... And took the gun away and subdued the little fucker and didn't have a gun himself in Talibandiana. So, you know, somewhere in the bowels of the National Rifle Association, Coleon Noir and Dana Lush and Greg Stinkfield and Ted Pantsful Nugent and Wayne the Peter... And Ollie, world's most famous gun runner north, are going, "God damn it!"
And I think the good guy is off in a corner crying now, Bob, because he didn't get to subdue the students, right?
Yeah, right. There wasn't no freedom. So yeah, you cherish these things. My daughter just sent me a photograph of the back corner of the back corner window on the driver's side of an SUV here in almost level West by Cole Trump Ginyastan. And it says, there's just four little letters. Love. And the L is a semi-automatic pistol with the barrel pointed up and the grip pointed to the right. The O is a hand grenade. The V is an open pocket knife. And the E is a semi-automatic assault rifle. Love. You know, people don't put that stuff on their cars unless they mean it.
give up.
I know. And it's just as well, because we got to get out of here. And you've got mayonnaise to go and buy, Tracy, so, you know.
I have a white wife. I have mayonnaise in the house.
Oh,
there you
go.
Oh,
okay, okay, just checking. Okay, so just go get a spoon.
Ew. how about mayonnaise and Nutella? How would that be?
Okay, I'm hanging up the phone now.
That'd be a gross combination.
Artichokes were on sale the other day. Boy, I had one with mayonnaise.
Oh, they're great with mayonnaise. They're great with mayonnaise.
Hot mayonnaise is what you need, like with, you know, kind of like the, what is it, the sauce you use for sushi, the green stuff, the
wasabi.
You know, mixed mayonnaise.
Wasabi really mayonnaise good. Is freaking fabulous.
Oh, yeah, wasabi mayonnaise is good, yeah.
Okay, we'll compromise, Tracy. Just go get a pot of potatoes boiling, and don't salt the potato salad, okay?
Tracy,
I'll
you
go
ever,
my Lowry.
Do you eat artichokes?
Oh, yeah, I love artichokes.
Oh, okay. Butter. What do you use? Just butter?
Butter.
Lemon butter.
Butter.
Lemon
butter. Yum. Yeah. Yum.
I've never tried it with mayonnaise. I'll actually have that. That sounds pretty damn good. Good night, good night, Tracy.
Good night. Good night.
Take care, Tracy. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Later,
good
y'all.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Billable Rick, and thanks, Steve. I'm sorry you got disconnected. Thank you, Sparky, as ever. Thanks, Steve from Georgistan. I hope you bowl a 301. And thanks to all of you for joining in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you to Nydia for her challenge this evening. Thank you to Kim and Malin for answering it. Thanks to all of you for engaging as you do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan, and thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky for moderating the Skype group. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Have a reflective Memorial Day weekend. Later, y'all.